We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for the next fiscal year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2009. Simply go to the sponsors page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. Thanks for your support.
Catholics can't make peace with this kind of deeply evil law without lying to themselves, lying to the believing community, and trying to fool God. It doesn't work. If someone would disagree with the church on abortion, I don't see how they can call themselves a Catholic. They shouldn't receive communion because they're not in communion. And the vanity or hurt feelings of an individual Catholic governor or senator or even vice president do not take priority over the faith of the believing community.
That's Denver Archbishop Charles Chaput speaking to reporters yesterday in Washington, D.C. I think he makes himself pretty clear, doesn't he? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. I'm Todd Wilk, and we'll be talking here in the first few minutes of this hour of Issues Etc. about those comments about archbishops in the Roman Catholic Church in America who appear to be taking a stand on the issue of pro-choice Roman Catholic lawmakers and the Eucharist and communion. After our conversation with Colleen Carroll Campbell on that subject and also on the subject of the new White House Council on Women, we'll spend the rest of today's show talking with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, continuing our series on the impact of Christianity on Western civilization. Today we'll talk about the influence of Christianity on education, on labor, on economic freedom, and on science. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 18th of March. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943, and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She's author of the book, The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Are the number of archbishops and bishops in the American Catholic Church willing to take a stand on this issue of communion and pro-choice lawmakers on the increase or the decrease?
I would say it was on the increase. I think we've heard a lot about this issue from bishops more and more, certainly the 2000 election, then 2004, and then 2008. You've had a few leaders in this. Obviously, St. Louis's own Archbishop Raymond Burke was an early and very vocal voice on this, but increasingly we're hearing more and more bishops, including some other St. Louis natives, Nauman in Kansas, talking about Governor Sebelius's horrendous record on abortion. Sheridan's another one. Olmstead, Martino, challenging Joe Biden's claims to be a pro-choice Catholic. And of course, Archbishop Chaput has been outspoken for many years, and a lot of what he's saying and what's getting attention is not new for him, but of course it's perhaps getting more play because someone like Archbishop Burke is not on the American scene anymore, and so what Archbishop Chaput is saying is getting a little more attention.
How did American Roman Catholicism, I don't know, get to the point where statements and actions like these on the part of bishops and archbishops are even necessary?
Well, necessary, and perhaps the bigger question is, why are they such a surprise? I mean, this should be exactly what you expect to hear from a Catholic bishop. You know, there are a number of factors that went into this. Certainly, it's a failure on the part of many bishops in the past to speak out forcefully. So a lot of pro-choice Catholic politicians got away with more and more and just figured they could because no one really called them out on it. Some of it was a result of the chaos that engulfed the church in the wake of Vatican II. You know, Catholics obviously very grateful for many of the fruits of the Second Vatican Council. One of the not-so-great fruits in America was that it sort of collided with the 1960s and all of the social chaos. And out of that, a lot of Catholics for at least a generation and possibly two came out very confused about core tenets of their faith and confused about church teachings, which ones can change and which ones can't. And obviously on fundamental moral teachings, such as the right to life. That's not something that changes from generation to generation or diocese to diocese. And then, of course, it was partly a fault of lay Catholics themselves, simply becoming accustomed to and comfortable in being part of the more and more part of the political mainstream, the economic moving up in the economic ranks, and finding that their core Catholic convictions got in the way of things. And this is particularly true, of course, for aspiring Democratic politicians, who many of them began pro-life and, you know, quickly dropped that part of their convictions because it furthered their careers to do so.
Someone might say, look, what's the use? Pro-choice Roman Catholic politicians, if they go to their parish where the priest or their diocese, where the archbishop may refuse to commune them because of their views that are fundamentally at odds with the clear views of the Roman Catholic Church on this, they're just going to find another parish to go to. Outside the diocese, inside the diocese, someone says, what's the use?
Well, I mean, I think there's some truth in that, of course. The Catholic Church is a huge church, and if you want to go look for a renegade priest who's going to give you communion no matter what, you'll probably be able to find one if you look long enough and hard enough. Especially in some dioceses, it might be easier than others. But the reason why these statements are important is because what these Catholic politicians are doing is scandalizing and confusing the rest of the faithful. How serious can the church really be about defending the right to life of the unborn if bishops are seen as kind of cozying up to the very politicians who advance the abortion agenda? So a lot of this is about teaching the rest of the flock, hey, here's where we draw a line. And if you're standing on this side of this moral issue, you're not in communion with the church. And then beyond that, and Archbishop Shapu mentioned this in his comments, it's about saving the soul as well as the politician, him or herself. The church views Holy Communion to be sacred and sees it as something that can be a great source of grace for a Catholic in communion with the church, but can also be, in a sense, a sort of a damning thing if you're receiving it unworthily over and over again and no one corrects you. And whose job is it to correct those who are receiving it unworthily? That's the bishop's job, and I hope more and more of them will speak out, as this bishop has.
What do you expect by way of reaction from Roman Catholic lawmakers, be it Joe Biden or any of the others? The ranks are pretty full there of pro-choice Roman Catholic lawmakers.
Yes, I don't think those kind of folks who've committed their entire lives to pushing an abortion agenda are exactly gonna cave because a couple of bishops tell them not to. I mean, they're pretty seduced, I'd say, at this point by the power that they've gained by making those moral compromises. But again, the important thing is looking into the future. How is this reflecting? How is this making other politicians reflect? Is this going to be, at the very least, something where a politician no longer trumpets his Catholic faith while also trumpeting his pro-abortion views and knows that he can get away with it? I think already we're seeing signs that some of those pro-choice Catholic politicians are skittish. It's making them uncomfortable. They're having to kind of go underground a bit with their alternative, and that's putting it generously, view of what Catholic doctrine is. And I hopefully, at the very least, we'll hear fewer of you know, Cardinal Pelosi's interpretations of Catholic teaching on abortion, on the morality of abortion, because a lot of these politicians, again, have gotten away with not only voting against the teachings of the church on these fundamental moral issues, but with distorting the church teaching itself, because it helps them look better when they say that it's unclear what the Catholic Church teaches. I don't think a lot of Americans are really buying that anymore, that it's somehow unclear where the church stands on this issue.
You've written most recently about President Obama's, what is he calling it now, a White House Council on Women and Girls. What is this council, and how do you evaluate its makeup?
Well, yes, I have a column coming out tomorrow in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch on this topic. And, you know, I think it's probably a lot of fluff, which is what it's been mocked as, since it has no permanent staff. And the membership is mostly composed of cabinet secretaries who one would presume have more important things to do than focus on its very amorphous mandate, which is to ensure that women and girls are treated fairly, whatever exactly that means. But what I found interesting and what I wrote about in tomorrow's Post-Dispatch on this is The signing ceremony that accompanied it on March 11th, you can tell a lot sometimes about where a president stands, what his priorities are, by the folks that he invites to these signing ceremonies. There were more than 120 women of all ages and ethnicities at this signing ceremony, but when you look down the list of their affiliations, it was shocking that they came almost exclusively from the ranks of extreme feminist groups, pro-abortion groups, gay rights groups, and just general Democratic political operatives. Even the representatives and senators who were there were overwhelmingly pro-choice Democrats, and the few scattered Republicans were mostly pro-choice Republicans. So for a president who claimed to be bipartisan, to want to listen to the views of everyone, particularly on contentious issues like abortion and gay marriage, I thought it was very telling that when he sought to have a group of diverse women around him, he didn't really seek out anyone who actually disagreed with him on any of these big issues, especially, I'm speaking of abortion.
Folks, you can read Colleen Carroll Campbell's columns under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a regular guest, a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book, The New Faithful. And she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Tomorrow's column on President Obama's White House Council on Women and Girls for evaluation. Colleen, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
When we come back from this break, Dr. Alvin Schmidt has an awful lot to say. He's a bit of an encyclopedia, and that's a good thing. We're trying to cover a lot of ground with him during a five-part daily series on the impact and influence of Christianity on Western civilization. And we're going to try and take on one, two, three, four subjects with him. Education, that's a big one. Labor, economic freedom, and believe it or not, the impact of Christianity on science. I mean, nowadays people will tell you that Christianity has had an impact on science and Western civilization. To hold it back, to keep it in the dark ages, and to keep it from being science isn't true. We'll find out why not with Dr. Alvin Schmidt on the other side of the break. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Live this Wednesday afternoon, March the 18th, 1-877-623-6943. Or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Pro-life leader Dr. Lawrence White on why you should support Issues Etc.
In a culture that has forgotten about the truth of God, God's people need to stand upon His word firmly and faithfully. Issues Etc. raises the questions that are in discussion in our society and in our church today in a way that highlights the truth of God amid all the error and the falsehood of men. This is a program that is making a difference in our society, in our church, in our culture, to the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending life from beginning to end. Issues Etc. Thanks for your support.
LCMS Inc. canceled this? You're listening to Issues Etc.
Ethical stem cells continue to promise results.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
At the same time that Britain's human embryo researchers are complaining of budget cuts, experiments with adult stem cells continue to bear fruit, with a possible cure for blindness on the near horizon. According to the group Physicians for Life, treatment involves transplanting adult stem cells onto the surface of the cornea to replace diseased cells. Lead researcher Professor Bal Dylan said, "Piloting the use of stem cell transplantation is a great landmark in the treatment of patients suffering from corneal blindness. Just more evidence that human embryos do not have to be harmed to treat disease."
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.